Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Mully and Hall, live and local. Chicago Sports Talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Swinging a fly ball deep left center. That's trouble. Back toward the fence is Ian Happ. That ball is gone for a 3-run homer for Lorenzo Cain. And Milwaukee has just taken a 4-1 lead here in the 10th inning. Happ hits a high fly ball, shallow left. Coming in is Yelich, a routine play. He makes the catch, and the ball game is over. Ian Happ retired on a fly ball to left, so the Cubs had a chance. But Milwaukee hangs on. They win the ball game 4-2 in 10 innings.
Their guy was really good early on. We tried to jump on the fastball, didn't have a lot of success. He's a really good pitcher. But then we continued to fight. The homer from Jock off Williams, really good reliever. Getting some runners on against the back end of their bullpen, and there at the end. I after going through like a long stretch with one or two hits or whatever it was, it was still nice to see these guys continue to have the same at-bats, not get too frustrated, continue to grind at-bats. Like, that's a positive in my book.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And that is the voice of David Ross. And it was curious and interesting to hear him a couple days ago on The Score. He talked to Lawrence. And, we just talked to Bruce, David, and we talked about guys up in key situations and the failure to kind of get it done and the missed opportunities. And he pointed out correctly that Javi Baez always, every time he came up, it seemed like he had somebody in scoring position and had an opportunity to get something done. And Rossi, a couple days ago, was on with Lawrence Holmes, and he talked about something he had said earlier about being selfish, about players needing to think of what they do and how they go about things. It's interesting because, we also talk about the right way to play baseball and moving guys and squeezing on the bat and moving up and trying to do different things and having a plan for whether it's a two-strike approach, how you start an at-bat, how you advance a runner, all these sorts of things. And we had talked earlier in the show about Castellanos and the kind of grindy nature of that hitter. And, oftentimes we question whether there's enough patience with Cubs hitters and whether they're doing the right things at bat sometimes.
Well, I think, though, that he's pointing out something Ron Coomer has alluded to at times, is that when you have to find a way to strike a balance between showing the kind of plate discipline that we and people look at as the signs of really professional hitters and good at bats. And boy, it's 11 pitch at bat. That's a good at bat. You know,
if he
grounds out the second on the 12th pitch, that was a good at bat because you took so many pitches and you waited and everything is about wearing out the starting pitcher or wearing out the pitcher on the mound by making him throw more pitches. And I think what they're getting at is, well, if you are aggressive and you feel like, you know, there's a pitch that you feel like you're going to be able to jump on and do something with, do it. Be selfish. Go out and try to make something happen in a way that is more aggressive and not maybe as disciplined. So if that means chasing every now and then, chase. And so I don't know, the good part about that is if you make contact, you make something happen, it is a reflection of you being aggressive. The bad part is, the downside is that, you know, it can get you into big problems if you swing and miss and it makes you look as exposed as at times guys like Javi Baez look. And because he has struggled lately, he's probably, you know, not the best example of that right now. And that's what Rossi was alluding to and talking about the other day.
Well, let's take a listen. Let's listen to David Ross with Lawrence on Tuesday.
I think it just makes a little bit of sense in the fact of, you know, when you're trying to play team baseball, you can sometimes get outside of like who you really are. If you're a guy like Javi needs to be a free swinger, needs to be aggressive. If we ask Javi to get up there and take a ton of pitches or shrink the strike zone in certain moments or try to get guys over in certain moments, like, it's just not who he is. And, you know, you have to let guys be themselves. And me asking Javi to choke up and hit the ball the other way when this guy is a power type hitter that can go deep at any part of the field at any time, you know, he needs the freedom to do that. I think the team aspect definitely comes into play when you've seen us be able to get guys over. The nice job by Eric Sogard last night and hitting that triple, but you know, that was a instance where he's trying to get that guy in off a really good reliever and has a really good at bat, off an elite reliever in the league, and ends up hitting a triple. But being able to get him over and do the small parts, Duffy taking that sac fly to right, great approach, staying up the middle, big part of the field. We'll have those type of bats, and that's the type of players those guys are. But to ask some of these other guys to play small ball, that's just not a part of their game. So I want them to be able to be themselves. You're going to have those moments where you're going to have to try to choke up and do the best you can to get that run in for the better of the group. But overall, if they get out there and get their numbers, that's going to build confidence. That's going to build a swagger in them that'll carry us throughout the league. And then I think the identity of the offense comes after that happens, not before.
All right, that was David Ross. And that is that's an interesting take when you consider that Javi had these opportunities and did not take advantage of it despite his free swinging.
Well, you want guys like Javi Baez to have that freedom, and you want Chris Bryant and maybe Anthony Rizzo and Wilson Contreras to have that kind of freedom. But you don't – the trick is that there are different rules, I think, for different hitters. You don't want – you know, he mentioned Sogard. That's not the approach you want him to take necessarily.
Right.
You want the – to be disciplined. Ian Happ, you want the people who are who it benefits to be – has show plate discipline to exhibit it. But Javi, I guess you want to get him back in a groove, so you got to let him be a free swinger, even though at times it looks like you know he's way off, and he has struggled, and last year was tough. This year he's off to a tough start, even though it's a little bit better. Is it? It seems like he's still struggling, still scuffling, and still trying to be the player that we have seen and know that he can be, but it's not happening yet.
I think part of the problem, though, David, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when he was in his sort of MVP pursuit year with the Yelich one and he finished second, he seemed to have a lot more plate discipline. And by that, I simply mean he wasn't expanding his strike zone. He seemed to have a strike zone that was a more sensible strike zone. And it wasn't, you know, I get it. He likes to swing and he likes to go after pitches, and you got to give him some of that leeway. But he's also, you know, you can't not have a strike zone. You have to have in your head some area where the ball must be for me to swing at it.
Yeah, but he feels like he can, you know, he's expanded the zone and maybe gets into bad habits. He's never been a guy to take walks, even during his MVP run that season in 2018. You know, he only walked 29 times. So yeah.
I'm not
like
talking about walks. I'm just talking about how many times did he strike out that season versus what we've seen. I mean, it seemed like he just had a more compact strike zone. It seems like he's expanded, and that's what hitters do. I understand that as you start scuffling and, you know, you end up opening up your strike zone instead of kind of turning it into something more compact. That's just the nature of wanting to get something done as opposed to staying disciplined in some form. But he has lost whatever plate discipline he once had.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and I think that's probably part of it. I think he's missing. I'm not sure he ever had great plate discipline, because even in that year that was the MVP year, he struck out 167 times. I mean, that's a lot of times. It's a lot of strikeouts. So I think it's always been, I don't want to say feast or famine, but you get that's part of who he is. We always say with Javi Baez, you know he's going well when he starts to hit for power to the opposite field.
Right.
And that's something I think his only home run this year has been to the opposite field. So you hope that's a sign of things to come. But he's really struggling right now, like the rest of the Cubs. And it may be, you know, hitting is infectious and one guy's success will lead to others and that aggressiveness will trickle on down. But, boy, I don't know that David Ross or anybody else in that Cub clubhouse has any answers right now for what ails them offensively, because they are just downright awful. 124 after six games, that's not the way you wanted to start this season.
And I'm not picking on him. It's just that, you know, that came up with Bruce and it made you think about what David Ross said earlier in the week. And I think it's just an interesting conversation to have. But I'm really not picking on him. It's not one guy. The problem isn't one guy. The problem is there isn't even one guy. There isn't even a guy that you look at and say, well, you know, when it comes around, you're going to have a chance here because this guy's batting. And that's very frustrating, I think, when you watch these games.
Or even a guy who you say, well, you know, you see that approach, you see how that worked, do that. Because the Cubs, through six games, really they don't even have somebody who is setting a good example, who is doing the right things. Everybody seems to be struggling at the same time. And now if you're David Ross, what do you do? Do you change your lineup? Do you try somebody different leading off? Do you think the changing the order would change the mix? He liked Rizzo and Bryant 3 and 4. Do you alter that approach? I don't know, Mully, because if you do that, then you're being responsive, but then you risk being accused of overreacting. In the clubhouse, I imagine everybody is used to the mantra. You heard it from Jock Peterson. You'll hear it from anybody you ask. It's early. Be patient. Stick with it. It'll change. Maybe, but fans and media, they get a little frustrated because we have seen this before.
Well, I mean, the good news is that you got the Pirates coming up, right? So this should be a get-well series. It really should. That's the whole point of having the Pirates on the schedule, is you can get healthy against them.
Yeah, but Monday night, the Brewers come calling again. So you face that bullpen. And I know that it's not maybe as lethal as in past years, but after the Pirates, you can't play them every other week. They're going to run out of games against the Pirates. At some point, you've got to have a consistent approach. You've got to try to get guys into a groove that they just haven't been able to find so far. So, yeah, maybe this weekend changes. And according to Dustin's math, he wants them to leave Pittsburgh hitting 200. They would have to hit 333 as a team in 100 bats to do that. Boy, if they can get 11 hits a game, that's all it takes.
I think you'd feel good about him.
We're
going to bring in Tony Stubblefield next. We'll talk to the new DePaul head coach when we get back. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It's an exciting day for DePaul Athletics, and our men's basketball program especially. Today, we're here to officially welcome Tony Stubblefield as DePaul's new men's basketball head coach. When we spoke last, I asked you to give me 30 days to undergo an extensive national search for our next head coach. And we did just that. It was a comprehensive process. And in all, we interviewed over 30 coaches in a 2-week period. We knew we had to find the right person for where our program is right now. Knowing that, we were steadfast in finding someone that exhibited a number of specific qualities qualities that I know from my experience are required for us to build a championship level program.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is DePaul Athletic Director Dwayne Peavy at yesterday's news conference introducing our next guest, and he is Tony Stubblefield, the new head coach at DePaul, brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Tony, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tony.
Good morning. Good morning, and thank you for having me on.
Well, we're delighted to talk to you, and heard what you had to say yesterday. The message is the same one that we've heard from Dwayne Peavy, which is returning DePaul basketball to its former prominent position. We all remember when DePaul was DePaul basketball is big, maybe bigger than the Bulls back in the pre-Jordan days. How quickly does it take to do that, Tony? How aggressively are you attacking this job?
Well, I can tell you this. I'm attacking it very aggressively. You know, there's some pieces in place right now from the team currently at DePaul that we have, and I just got to recruit very aggressively, hit that hard, and add some pieces to what we already have. So there's some pieces already in place with the transfer portal being what it is, the transfers being able to be eligible immediately with some high school kids available. There's an opportunity to get those pieces right now where we can be very, very competitive in the Big East right away. And that's my goal.
So, Tony, you have some Midwestern ties in your background, whether it's Iowa or whether it's coaching at Cincinnati. You do have some Midwestern exposure. Just curious, what is your relationship like in the past with DePaul basketball, and how familiar are you with its history and tradition? And I guess people also wonder, how does a guy who's an assistant coach in the Pac-12 end up on DePaul's radar?
I tell you what, growing up in Clinton, Iowa, I was very familiar with DePaul basketball, watching it on WGN Channel 9. You know, I'm familiar with the tradition and the history of the success DePaul basketball has had. So I'm very familiar with it from that standpoint. And again, you know, being at the University of Oregon, Oregon is a national brand, so we've had to recruit nationally. So, you know, it was a situation where when Dwayne reached out, I obviously had a sincere interest in DePaul because I knew the potential of the Blue Demons and what could happen at DePaul University and, you know, things that had happened in the past. So, you know, just the city of Chicago having a great recruiting base starting in Chicago, the suburbs, the state of Illinois, selling the Big East, this job has great potential. And again, it's been done before. We're not trying to rewrite the wheel here. It's been done before at DePaul University.
And, you know, you've mentioned recruiting. Obviously, when we heard from Dwayne Peavy yesterday, he called you an elite recruiter, and that has been your reputation. Is it as simple as just getting players in? What about the X's and O's? How do you play the game itself? What are you looking for? What is a typical type of player that you want coming into the program?
Well, you know, first of all, I think you do have to have the talent. I think that's very important. But again, it's more to it than just the talent. You got to get the talent, one. And then you got to get the talent to buy in, to playing together and competing night in on a night out basis to win basketball games. So you got to get them buy in to playing together, playing team basketball, sharing the ball, and playing competitive and trying to win basketball games. So, again, first of all, you do have to have the talent. There's no doubt about that. You got to have players. But you have to have the buy-in from them of playing together to be the best team possible, to trying to win Big East championships, advancing onto the NCAA tournament, and trying to win games in the tournament. Obviously, style of play is very important. I really want to get up and down. I want to push that ball, and I want to have the defense on their heels. So, you know, I want to play an exciting brand of basketball, playing hard. That's very attractive to recruits, to fans.
Do you find that there's a big contrast in styles between the Pac-12 and the Big East, and in the perception being it might be more of a grinded out approach in the Big East and the Pac-12? You look at the success the league had in the NCAA tournament, you know, but the way that that you guys played, is there a big difference, and is that what you're offering and bringing to Chicago?
You know, I'm very familiar with the Big East. In 2006, when Cincinnati was transitioning to the Big East, I was a part of that. So I coached in the Big East for 4 years prior to going to the to the Pac-12. So I saw it both ways, from the Big East to the Pac-12. And yes, there is a little bit of difference, a little bit more physical of a league in the Big East than what it is. You know, the Pac-12 is a little bit more of a wide open style of play, a little bit more scoring. So again, I do want to, you know, get up and down the floor more, bring skilled players in, and really have the ability to be able to open up the floor with skilled, talented guys.
When we think of the guys that you have coached with, you know, we certainly know Lou Henson well from his days at Illinois. Mick Cronin, another guy you've worked with. You mentioned Cincinnati. Dana Altman, of course, we know him as a coach. Which of those guys is more closely related to how you will run your team than the other?
I tell you what. I feel like over the course of my career that I've gotten a PhD in coaching. You know, I've learned from some great coaches, just how great a person Lou was, a great X and O guy, to going to work for Mick Cronin, where it was a rebuild situation at the University of Cincinnati, and just Mick's approach from a defensive standpoint, even an offensive philosophy, and then going to work for Dana Altman, who we know has had great success at Creighton before taking the Oregon job, and they've had great success at Oregon. So, again, I've taken a little bit from each of those guys, and they've been all very critical in my career to helping me be successful. So, again, I can't say I'm more like one than the other. I've learned a great deal from all of those guys over the course of my career.
Tony, you talk about building a culture in recruiting. And I have to ask you about the incident at Oregon that a couple years ago. I wonder if it came up during the interview process where there were three players who were accused of sexual assault in a very controversial case out there that resulted in an $800,000 settlement with the accuser. They were players that you recruited, players that you, I think, stood by, if I'm reading the stories correctly. Did that come up in the interview process, and how did you explain your role in it?
Well, obviously, that had been vetted very thoroughly by Dwayne, by the university. And again, it was an unfortunate situation. The university investigated it very thoroughly, and that was public knowledge. And I have high expectations for student athletes and recruits.
And I believe Dwayne said that he carefully vetted you, that you know, they vetted apparently 30 candidates and interviewed different ones, but he said he carefully vetted you, and we know you were not investigated, but you were mentioned in the federal corruption trial into recruiting. So how did you explain all that stuff to him, and how did you make him comfortable with what you do?
Well, I can tell you unequivocally that, you know, none of that was true. So there really wasn't a lot of explaining that I had to do on my behalf. You know, it wasn't true.
Okay. And when he, you know, came to you about that, you just told him that very fact, that none of that was accurate. Yeah.
And again, you know, I'm sure Dwayne had did his due diligence by reaching out to the NCAA, our compliance, before even having the conversation with me.
Right.
So Tony, we know that Phil Knight was involved, the CEO of Nike, and you have a relationship with him. Does that mean that the new uniforms will be metallic royal blue and scarlet next year for DePaul? Is there going to be a big influence in that way?
I tell you what, I can't be, you know, speak on behalf of that. Phil obviously has played a great part at the University of Oregon in college, period. You know, it's just not that he's a big donor for Oregon. He donates to his alma mater that we went to in Stanford. And he, you know, Nike has been great to a lot of universities. So, you know, I don't know what the plans are in place, but I'm just looking forward to being the head coach at DePaul University.
And, you know, we know that Dwayne Peavy came from Kentucky, and Kentucky was kind of what spoke to him in terms of the kind of basketball program. We think of them as having a lot of these one-and-done players. What is your philosophy in terms of building a team? You mentioned the graduate transfers or players, rather, in the transfer portal. I think there are seven DePaul players currently in that portal. Will you try to reach out to any of them? Do you want any of those guys back? Do you have players already that you've recruited that you know? How many players will be coming in here, and how many kind of one-and-done guys? Does that matter to you at all?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, I do plan on, you know, I had a team meeting, a short team meeting when I first arrived. I do plan on meeting with all the current players and getting their thoughts and sharing with them my vision. And I would do that within the next couple of days. So, you know, I do understand that there's some guys currently in the portal, and I'd like to visit with them and just get their opinion on kind of where they're at with the process. So that's the number one thing I do want to do, is visit with our current players that are here and just, again, share my vision and get their thoughts on how they want to move forward. Two, one and done, we've been blessed. We were fortunate that we did have some young men at the University of Oregon that were one and done players.
What do you think of Chicago, Tony?
Finish
your thought on the one and done. Sorry about that.
Okay. I'm not opposed to one and done players. I'm not here to say we're going to have six or seven one and done players. I really think you have to have a foundation. And when I say a foundation, I think you have to have guys that are in the program 4 or 5 years that know what we're trying to build here at DePaul. So, again, I'm not opposed to recruiting one and done guys. To have 4 or 5 of them out there, I don't necessarily know if that's the answer. I think you have to have a foundation of guys that are here 4 to 5 years. You have to have the ability to be able to add a transfer into that. And I have a philosophy that I think you got to get old and stay old. If you look at the teams that have been very successful in the NCAA tournament, you know, a team like Baylor that had 3 or 4 transfers and 3 or 4 guys on that team that were there as freshmen that had been a part of that program for 4 to 5 years, they were an older, more experienced team. So I think that's very, very important to get old and stay old, but again, have a foundation of guys that have been in your program for 4 to 5 years.
Thanks a lot, Tony. Enjoy Chicago. Welcome to town, and best of luck to you at DePaul.
Appreciate it.
I'm very excited to be here. Chicago is a great city, and I'm looking forward to getting this thing going.
Great stuff. Thanks so much. That's Tony Stubblefield. We're going to bring in Gordon Whitmeyer next.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Time to unload a few of the things that really grind my gears.
Gordon Whitmeyer.
I want to talk about these Cubs and what they're doing.
Cubs insider for NBC Sports Chicago.
Who the hell are you? Are you the Chicago Cubs or not? And are these players who you think they are? Do you want them back? Because if you do, you better step up a lot bigger than you are now. And if you don't, fine. Who's replacing them? Who you got coming? Who are you going to go get? Because those guys are going to cost money.
Perpetually annoyed.
A lot of other things grind my gears, too. Like the DH, unbalanced schedules, tanking, one-game playoff series.
Gordon Whitmeyer with Molly and Hall on 670 The Score.
Now get off my lawn.
Molly and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Gordon Whitmeyer is brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Gordon, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Gordon.
Morning. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're still trying to figure out what happened. We watched it. We were texting back and forth during it, and we still are kind of befuddled as to how this offense is broke. It's crazy that Theo said that and that it resonates now for a few years since he said it.
Yeah, and you can only blame one day on the weather, right?
Yeah.
You can't even blame it on the schedule. You got the Pirates out of the chute for 3 games. And then you got the back end of the Brewers rotation for the next 2. And they're still scoring barely 3 runs a game. So some of the guys are slow starters. Some of the guys are just starting slow. I can't explain it. I do think that at least a couple of them are pressing. I think Jock Peterson alluded to that a little bit yesterday. I haven't necessarily seen it out of like Chris Bryant. I mean, he's looked generally okay. Some of the other guys, I mean, even Rizzo hasn't been, you know, like his numbers look terrible, but he hasn't looked terrible game to game. But I think Javi Baez is pressing, and you know, I just named off all the guys that are in contract years. So whether that has something to do with it or not, we'll probably find out over the next 2 or 3 weeks when we look up and see how they're doing then.
Extraordinary statistic yesterday unearthed by the historian Ed Hardig, Gordon. It was the first time the Cubs have been no-hit for 11 straight innings between over two games since 1965. So when you start to talk about...
Most of that was a Sandy Koufax no-hitter.
Right. I know, but this is still,
that's what I'm saying.
How long it has been since the Cubs had gone that long without a hit, that kind of historic futility. How do you respond to that? Do you keep on saying, okay, it's early, I'm not going to change the lineup, I'm going to keep trusting these guys, because we are only six games in, and yet, as you alluded to, it seems like it's longer because we have seen this so often before.
Yeah, it will. Look, and we're talking the day after they face Brandon Woodruff, who is probably one of the two or three best pitchers in the division. And I said this early in the day to somebody yesterday when all the questions to Ross were about, you know, what about this slow start? And, you know, what do you do about that? Look, they could have scored 10 runs the day before, and still what happened yesterday might have happened because Brandon Woodruff is really good. And they had other guys ready to go in that bullpen. But that said, it didn't just happen yesterday. It happened the day before, too. And it happened against some more nondescript Pirates guys, too, before that. So, and the weather's been hitter-friendly. I mean, was it Tuesday? You know, the Brewers are hitting balls out of the park. The Cubs couldn't even hit the ball in the air. And much less get one to land on the grass. It is something it's obviously a problem. I just, six games in, it happens, right? And we've seen this happen before, and then they start hitting. I think these guys that are veterans that have done it before, who aren't 38 years old, are going to eventually hit, and I think they're eventually going to be okay. I think it's so tough early in a season, especially when there seems to be so much at stake. You know, there's 18 guys on this 26-man roster that are in walk years. They completely revamped this roster since last year. They're coming off a weird, weird year. Now, not everybody's responding that way around baseball, but these guys have a lot of scrutiny on them and have. And by the way, I think a lot of that scrutiny, you alluded to it, a lot of that scrutiny the last few years has come from their own front office. You don't often see that. Front offices that say out of one side of their mouth, we love these guys, we want to bring them back, we've offered them extensions. And out of the other side of the mouth, the offense broke, everybody on the roster is available, and we need to make major changes around here. So you get those kind of messages, and it would seem... not surprising at all that somebody might press out of the gate.
You're listening to Mully and Haw on the Score, and this segment with Gordon Whitmire is brought to you by Kenosha Subaru. And Gordon, you know, how do you respond to that then? Do you move things around? Do you change things up? Does Ross do anything other than just take on the Pirates and hope that maybe Jock Peterson is right and it's going to be a lot of fun when everyone starts going?
Well, you've seen him move some things around already, and I think that a lot of that was by design even before going in. They've got a couple of different lineups they put out there depending on the kind of matchups they're looking at. I don't think he'll be afraid to move guys around even more. I mean, Baez is down in the lineup most days. So I don't know that you do a lot of that. I do think what you do is you make sure your pitching stays healthy, and you make sure you're managing the pitching staff as well as you can. And they've actually been a bright spot. The rotation, in fact, the three guys the three new guys in the rotation are the three pitchers with the wins, and they've all pitched really well. So if that can keep up, and you know, Hendricks bounced back, the pitching was the question mark coming in, because whatever the lineup was going to do, you kind of knew who you had, and you knew eventually over the course of a year what you were going to get from them. The pitching could have gone either way, still can. Early signs are good. That's what's going to win them or lose them a division. They're 3-3 because of their pitching. If the three new guys had pitched, you know, not so great, or had a couple of issues, they'd be 1-5 right now.
Fair enough. Starting pitching has been solid. I think there's a lot to like.
The rotation.
There,
I mean, bullpen's the been rotation. Even better.
Okay, but how sustainable is it? I mean, look, Mills. I like Alec Mills, but is he being used in the right way? If he's going to be this sort of, you know, emergency closer and coming in yesterday as well. I think you're right. When you look at the numbers, you don't want to be a hypocrite here, but I do worry about the bullpen, because I don't know if these creative solutions are sustainable.
Right. And there's the thing to keep in mind is you not only have numbers out in that bullpen with nine arms out there, but you've got numbers in South Bend. Now, do you have numbers that belong to future Hall of Famers? No, not unless Craig Kimbrell finishes his career as strong as he started it. For any of these guys, right? But there's a few intriguing guys down there at South Bend, and this is sort of a 15, 16 man bullpen that ultimately they will employ. Now, I'm more, you've mentioned this bullpen. I've always been more worried about the starting pitching. It all begins there. And as soon as two guys in that rotation aren't doing the job, or one gets hurt and another guy's not doing the job, you run out of depth real fast. And then now you've got a bad rotation really fast. Right now they're not there. Right now they're actually pitching to design, and this is the thing. Right, they got a bunch of soft tossers in there, but they've got this pitching infrastructure that they've talked about for years, and they thought they had some ideas for each one of these guys they brought in that they could get X, Y, and Z out of. And so far it's roughly following their design. And if Jake Arrieta stays healthy, the last time he was healthy, he performed pretty well. Now, he's 3 years older now than that year, but if so far so good, he's healthy, and he looked like he could get the job done the other day. So it's going to be cross your fingers and hold your breath all year long with these guys. But if they stay healthy and they roughly follow the design, then they can hang in there, and at least it'll be an entertaining year, if not a championship year.
Great stuff, Gordon. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Gordon.
All right, guys, take it easy.
That is Gordon Whitmire. Interesting stuff when you think about it. Hey, the White Sox are home. They're going to play today. The Cubs are at Pittsburgh. They're going to play today. We got two more day games. I'd be happy about it, David, but it didn't work out yesterday. So hopefully we have a reversal of fortune, right? Isn't that what we're looking for? We'll discuss
I'm going to be disappointed
next.
At least early. It'll happen before dinner.
That'll stop you eating? Is that the idea?
Maybe.
It's Wally and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.